Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
FreedomRadio.com on AMFM stations all across America and also, incidentally, New Zealand. And we've got lots of little fabulous affiliates all around the place who broadcast the show on the internet, share the links, that kind of thing. We wouldn't be able to get you cool people all the time without all your support, particularly the listeners who suggest all these great guests. This guest coming up here, I have not met, have not researched, just like every single guest. I don't do that because it prejudices, it gives you preconceived notions about who it is you're talking to. And it's better that they explain who they are and what they do, because who could explain it better? The person themselves. That way, you, the listener, who may not have heard the guests, get to know them for the first time, just like I am. So we share that experience and grow a little better for it. I hope. I could be wrong. My very special guest today is Catherine Albrecht, I believe. Catherine, are you there?
I sure am. It's so good to be on with you, Vinny. How are you?
Somewhat fabulous is my party line.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. Is it the middle of the night over where you are? Or the middle of the morning?
It is the middle of the morning. It's a sharp 10 a.m.
Ah, there we go. All right. Well, it's we're just winding down our Friday evening over here in New England.
Well, I hope you're going to hit the bars later and go absolutely ape crazy.
I don't know about that, but something close, some equivalent thereof.
Yeah, everybody's got their own equivalent of blowing off steam and having a good time, don't they?
Absolutely. And if they don't, they should.
You're absolutely correct, and this is something that dawned on me as little as last night. My goodness, everybody has their vice. It could be conversation, it could be drugs, it could be alcohol. As long as you're not going absolutely going crazy and what have you, yelling and screaming, frothing at the mouth or whatever, I think you're fine.
Yeah, you know, my recent thing has been exercise. That's been, you kind of get into a different mindset. I think I'm not addicted to exercise. I'm still trying to make it just a habit to incorporate it into my life. But I do know that you can get kind of that exercise high. And then afterwards, you really do feel more relaxed. It's a good thing.
It is. It is. We spend so much time pent up, whether we're in the box of our cars, the box of our homes, or the box of our workplace. We're not really doing anything per se, and all that energy gets pent up. Unless you release it, you're going to wind up having to eat you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, Catherine, would you please elaborate as to just who you are and what you do, and make sure to include a website plug, because this show's kind of like a bathtub. It doesn't work very well without one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. I have a doctorate from Harvard University in consumer education, human development, and psychology. I have been, since 1999, working on consumer privacy issues, so I'm a consumer privacy expert and advocate. I've done street-level protests against big corporations all across the globe. I have done written legislation on privacy-related issues, written a best-selling book called Spy Chips, which is all about radio frequency identification microchips that we call spy chips. I've worked on the issue of supermarket frequent shopper cards and the privacy implications with those. And most recently, I have helped to develop a private alternative to Google, a search engine that returns full Google results but with total privacy. And that's after I discovered that probably the biggest privacy threat that we face nowadays online is this enormous giant that we've all been feeding, the biggest database of personal information ever collected in the history of the world on people, and it's all residing there in the servers at Google. So when I figured that out, I said, well, I'm either going to have to go live in the woods, just throw away my computer and give it up, or I'm going to have to find or help develop an alternative to that. And so I've been working very closely with StartPage, which is startpage.com, the world's most private search engine. Helped to develop that a couple of years back, and that has become a big consuming part of what I do nowadays.
Excellent. Well, basing on your list of experiences and fields of research and things like that, it occurs to me that almost everything that you do, basically that everything that you normally talk about and expose or delve into, is something that affects really everybody. And it either affects them all right now or it soon will.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There's a big story out of England right now. Back in 1999, I started the organization called Caspian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. We're now up over 20,000 members all over the world. And if people want to check out the original website of that organization, it's at nocards, nocards.org. And when I created that, it was to point out to people that the frequent shopper cards hanging off their keychains could be abused. And I made a number of predictions 12, 13 years ago about exactly how those could potentially become of interest to the government, who may want to use them to track people's food consumption, especially in countries where there's single-payer health insurance or national health insurance, because it would be it would behoove the government to be able to tell, well, who's eating too much ice cream or too much candy or too much salty foods or what have you. So those were predictions that I made 12, 13 years ago and made them very vocally. I've done over 2,000 radio interviews and television interviews and print interviews. I've been all over the world talking about this and testified, you know, you name it. And people said, well, you know, it's never going to come to that. Come on, this is really just about marketing. The only reason they're scanning the frequent shopper card at the supermarket is because they want to encourage you to shop there. And I said, well, no, if you read their internal publications, the reason they want you to do that is they want to register all of the food that you purchase. And over the 10, 12 years since I began doing that research, I discovered that not only are they registering every stick of celery and every, you know, pint of beer that you purchase in the store, but they're also now translating each of those items that you purchase into its nutritional breakdown. So they look at the amount of calories, the amount of trans fats, the amount of saturated fats, the amount of sodium, the vitamin content, the amount of genetically modified ingredients, or, you know, frankenfoods, as we call them here. They look at all of that, and they put it into a big database so they can make predictions about your health. So those predictions may be, well, gee, the way this person's eating, they're going to wind up with diabetes before too much longer. Or, gee, this person has high blood pressure. We can tell because they're purchasing low-sodium foods. Or this person recently had a baby. We can tell because they're buying baby formula or diapers or nappies, as they call them in England. So those kinds of predictions about households have now become far more than simply a list of what you buy and what brands you purchase, which is what the marketers claim. And they've now moved into the arena of becoming health records. And where that is problematic, it was actually about 5 years ago here in the part of the U.S. that I live in New Hampshire, our biggest local grocery chain is actually a Dutch company. It is called Stop and Shop. It's owned by Royal Ahold, A-H-O-L-D, which is a big Dutch multinational supermarket company. And they admitted that they were using the frequent shopper card information that they were collecting on people to convert them into these nutritional health profiles on individuals. And when I asked their vice president for new technologies, a man named Kurt Avalon, and I have this on tape, I said, well, what are you going to do with all that information? And his answer was totally shocking. He said, well, we'd like to monetize it by sharing it with two or three health insurance companies. So we now know, and that was five, 6 years ago. The recent article that came out in the UK Telegraph said that there is a government, it's kind of a commission, I suppose, there in the UK, that is looking at obtaining those supermarket card records for precisely the reason that I predicted back in 1999, is that if you allow the supermarkets, the private sector, to make a record of everything that you buy, and if they, behind the scenes, are converting those into health records, it is just a matter of time before the government is going to make the argument that they need to have access to those records, first of all. And second of all, once they get access to the records and they start looking at, well, gee, you know, we're noticing that people who eat too many potato chips do have obesity problems, or people who eat too much of this or that have this or that health pattern, then the next step is going to be rationing or limiting the amount of particular foods that particular individuals can buy. Now, here in the U.S., we just had a big blow to our freedom here in this country when the Supreme Court ruled this week that the Obamacare National Health Insurance Program is constitutional and will go forward. And the thing that has me concerned is someone who spent many years studying the issue of food freedom, I suppose you could call it, is that once that moves forward, we're going to be in the same boat as England, where they now want to use these shopper card records to try to, you know, nudge people into different purchasing habits and potentially down the road, you know, say you've bought enough chocolate for the month, ma'am. You know, no more butter for you. You're limited to broccoli and brown rice from here on out because you've hit your quota. So in the U.S., once the Obamacare legislation becomes a reality and is implemented, and we're on the same system that England is on and other countries, Canada is on, then I truly believe that these technologies that we've built are going to be almost irresistible for the government to say, hey, we want to use it to control what you eat.
You know what? I think every single country has this. And you know what's going to happen? They're all going to implement it simultaneously.
Hmm. Well, you know what's
That's
been
what
interesting,
I'm thinking,
Vinny?
Anyway.
Yeah, well, what's been interesting, Vinny, has been watching the rollout of the technology itself. And this happened very quietly behind the scenes. I was shouting from the rooftops. But for most people around the globe, it was a pretty silent transition. As one after another, the grocery chains in all of our respective countries began introducing these saver cards. You know, they have lots of names. In England, in the U.S., they use them to charge different prices. So you'll only get a discount.
I have an anecdote for this. I remember my girlfriend got an email, like, you know, every now and again, girls will be girls. They want to buy some chocolate and what have you. And what it did is every time she'd used her card, it sends her this email this one time. All of these things that she'd bought over the years, all these chocolates and ice creams and whatever, they were all basically on special, and they just send her the specials based upon these brands that she's bought. And that alone, that's even the intended purpose of these cards. That alone is really scary.
You know, that is. There's a bunch of purposes of these cards. The primary purpose is not to get your loyalty or to encourage you to shop there. That's kind of a... That's the superficial explanation that they give to us. But the reality is that these cards provide them with very valuable information about their shoppers. And they can use the cards to determine which shoppers are are valuable and which shoppers cost them money. And there's a supermarket consultant, a marketing consultant here in the U.S., and he and I have testified at a lot of the same government, you know, Federal Trade Commission hearings and the like. His name is Marty Abrams. And he wrote an article a number of years back advising the retail industry how they could make better use of the data that they collect from these cards. And what he said is you can use them to identify the bottom feeders, you know, the loser shoppers that you don't want, the people who waste your cashier's time, the people who use a shopping cart and keep it from someone else using it, the people who are just breathing your air when they're not contributing to the bottom line. And those might be people that, because they've lost a job, maybe they're college students, for whatever reason, they are purchasing things that are on sale, and they're not pulling their weight, at least as far as this consultant was referring to them. He said, well, what you can do is have a loyalty card, a frequent shopper card that identifies them as they walk into the store. So this is going to be the trend of the future. No longer will you be identifying yourself at the checkout, but you'll actually be identifying yourself as you walk in. And then he says, once we have people identifying themselves as they walk in, then we can find ways to charge them higher prices or offer them poor service as a way to discourage them from shopping at the store. So there's a huge discriminatory element in all of this. And unfortunately, unlike our grandparents' generation, we don't have backyard gardens where we have an alternative way to get food. If your grocery store decides to start charging you higher prices and offering you poor service to discourage you from shopping there, and little by little we're losing all of the competition. I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but here in the States, you know, city after city that used to have 10, you know, 8 or 10 different grocery stores now is down to having, you know, Walmart and Safeway, and that's it. So we're losing retail diversity.
I was thinking that there are a lot of people who are in our mind of thinking that have businesses too, like little stores and things of that nature. And they do all sorts of services. You know, they're interior decorators, painters, mechanics, and basically every service you want. There's somebody who believes that 9/11 was an inside job, and there's an evil group of scumbaggery individuals that are attempting to control all life on Earth, basically. And so what you do is you create a business network like that, so that every single customer they have will be somebody like us.
Well, so is a good thing or is a bad thing? I'm trying to follow where you are there.
Well,
where are you going
this
with that?
This way, all of the people who know that the New World Order is trying to enslave us and undermine all our business practices and things of that nature can actually act very similar to them and form a cartel and gradually squeeze out and do the old Rockefeller sweating to put Monsanto and all these big bad oil companies and all these New World Order owned companies out of business.
Well, and that's why they're using their lobbying power and the power of their donations and the fact that many of the people that are in elected office now are simply puppets that have been put up to run for office by the very same people that they purport to regulate. They are using that clout and that power to try to ensure that the small player can't even compete. You know, here in the U.S., we have regulations that keep coming up and we keep having to fight them down that say essentially...
We'll have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're coming to a break, so we'll be back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, with the fabulous Dr. Catherine Albrecht from CatherineAlbrecht.com. And you can also join in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com there. And also later on after the show, ladies and gentlemen, if you are listening live in New Zealand, we will be having a chemtrail protest starting about an hour after we finish the show today. We'll be right back. Much confusion indeed. This is George W. Bush's theme song whenever he travels with Tony Blair. There's all these people that are trying to citizen arrest them because they got found guilty of war crimes in this courtroom. A bunch of judges and all this stuff got together, laid out the evidence. Yep, they're guilty as sin. It's everywhere they go. They get dogged by protesters, get called scumbags by me whenever they come here to New Zealand, you know. There is a heck of a lot of resistance rising in every single sector. It doesn't matter what it is. And when it comes to the names of people, somebody would... I was talking to one of my listeners last night. He drove up here from 2 hours away just to see me, kind of thing, and then just drove home again. Amazing, the dedication my listeners have. And we were talking about it, and it's like everybody contributes their own little bit, and they don't have to control anybody else, and it almost becomes harmonious with the flow of the universe, as it were. Everybody doing their own little thing in their own little way, suddenly you've got this enormous machine that you didn't even all know that you were building. It's like the opposite of the Manhattan Project. Nobody knows what they're building on, and they're on a need-to-know basis. Except instead of building a weapon of war, We're building a weapon of peace, trying to disarm the enemy, disarm their propaganda, disarm their conspiracies, disarm their secrets. When you use the weapons of the enemy against them, they have no defense. This is why people who expose it and have a lot of credibility, like my very special guest, Catherine Albrecht, are so important. And I asked my listener the other night, I'm interviewing this Catherine Albrecht person. I don't know who she is, but I know I've heard of the name, right? And you know that if you don't know who somebody is, but you've heard of the name, but you haven't met them or anything like that, then they must have done something incredible, like really amazing, like cured cancer or been a high-level whistleblower or something of that nature, in order to have that name stick in your mind and not know what it's for. Catherine Albrecht is my guest. Welcome back.
Hey, Vinny. Good to be back with you.
You're very welcome.
So we could go on about the supermarkets and the control of food. I think it's a huge issue. I think that we have allowed the creation of a very complex and extraordinarily expensive infrastructure to link people's purchases with their identity, kind of a your papers, please, for food, as it were, in the form of these supermarket frequent shopper cards. I actually wound up writing my dissertation at Harvard University on this topic, so I've spent a lot of time. I'm probably the world's leading expert on supermarket cards, supermarket frequent shopper cards, of all things. I'm probably also the world's leading expert on implantable microchips. So those are the two things that I've devoted a huge amount of my time to. And I want to get on to the microchip issue. I want to leave this food issue in just a moment. But the fact that 13 years after I first founded Caspian, the consumer organization that I founded to raise the alarm about these supermarket frequent shopper cards, the fact that now we're actually seeing them in the news doing exactly what I had predicted they were going to do, it's happening right before our very eyes. And the infrastructure to monitor people's purchases, you have to bear in mind, back in 1999, when I founded this organization, the Internet was not a potential payment system mechanism. We were in a very different era in terms of the technology that was available. And the supermarket frequent shopper card single-handedly drove the introduction of billions of dollars of technology installed at the point of sale. That's what the industry calls it. You and I call it a cash register. In every place from Jamaica to Yemen, from New Zealand to the U.S., to Vietnam and Thailand and Ecuador, and virtually every country on the globe now is part of this global network where they, as you scan your frequent shopper card, they've got software installed, hardware installed, data transmission installed, where the cash registers hook up to the Internet. So I truly believe that we are going to get to a point where there will be a global food monitoring system. And what drove the creation of that was all of the frequent shopper cards. So I advise people when they say, well, what should we do about it? Well, the very first thing you can do about it is stop participating in it. So I recommend that people boycott. Yeah, boycott the store.
Using mine. I stopped using those cards I think about a year ago. I've never felt better about it.
Yeah, but you got to be careful because it's not just not using the card. It's actually not using the card and not shopping at the store that offers the card. Because if everyone who disliked these cards simply stopped using them, they never would have gotten a toehold in the first place. And so what I always say, your shopping dollars are like fertilizer to a plant. If you withhold it, it will die. If you continue to pour it out, even if you grumble and you sputter and you complain, if you're giving them your money, they will continue to grow and thrive and replicate, and you'll have more of the same practices that you don't like. So what I often tell people is going into a store and taking money out of your wallet and paying it to the store is like going into the ballot box on election day and putting a check mark or pulling the lever for a particular candidate. So we need to be much more conscious of the way that we spend our money, because that is what, you know, the old song, money makes the world go around. It really is your money that drives and feeds and promotes these processes. So there's really two things that you can do in the physical space, and then I want to get a little bit into the Internet and online space. in your physical space, be conscious of where you're shopping. If the stores that you're shopping at are big global corporations, there's a very good chance that they have invested a large portion of the money you're paying to them. They're reinvesting it in tracking and surveillance technologies over their customers. And if people would like to learn more about how this works, I would be happy to send them a PDF of an article that I wrote titled Supermarket Cards, Tip of the Retail Surveillance Iceberg. And just like an iceberg shows a little tiny bit on the top and a huge big thing floating underneath, as the Titanic learned to its dismay, the same thing is true, that the supermarket card that hangs off your keychain or that you've placed in your wallet is just a little visible tip of an enormous data collection apparatus that has been set up worldwide to record and, I believe, ultimately to control the food that we eat. And so if people would like to get a copy, it's a 43-page article that I wrote for the Denver University Law Review. I'd be happy to send it free of charge as a PDF. People can email me. I'm going to give my email address here. It's KMA, those are my initials, KMA, at spychips.com, SPYCHIPS.com. You can let me know that you heard me on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and you can just put supermarket card up in the title or in the subject bar, and I'll send that to you. So you can read all about how the predictions that I was making several years ago are actually now happening. So that's, I think, number one, stop shopping at these stores. Stop buying the products that are manufactured by these big global manufacturers like Procter & Gamble, the biggest consumer product retailer on the globe. They are single-handedly responsible for creating the whole RFID tracking system, which ultimately wants to place a tracking microchip on every product manufactured on the globe and track them into your homes, track your use of them from the medicine cabinet, from your bathroom, from the refrigerator in your kitchen, tracking you and what's in your pocket or your purse or what kind of underwear you're wearing as you walk through a doorway of a store, that they'd be scanning you right through your clothes. I mean, it's horrifying. And that was all developed by Procter & Gamble. So, you know, Tide laundry detergent and Crest toothpaste and Cascade dishwashing detergent and Clairol hair products, and, you know, the list goes on and on. And if you look in most homes around the world, you'll see Procter & Gamble products. Why are we feeding this beast? Why are we funding the company that's creating essentially the chains that will be shackling the things that we buy in the future? The second thing people can do is be more conscious of using cash. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about how we're on the brink of a cashless society. If we become a cashless society, there's two huge problems with that. Number one, you will never again be able to make an anonymous or private purchase. And if that doesn't bother you, it should. It would tell me that you probably want to reassess your understanding of the way the world works if you think it's okay. But the second huge problem with that is that once your ability to purchase becomes linked to your identity by necessity, because there is no cash, because you're using a numbered account that's tied to you, it makes it very easy for the powers that be to simply turn off your cash chip, or simply turn off your account, or wipe it down to zeros, or say that you are no longer capable of buying chocolate because you've had 3 bars already this month and we're trying to ration it. So if you want to avoid the downside of a cashless future, which will mean that food will be monitored and controlled and rationed, it will mean that you will have no more privacy in terms of what you buy and where you buy it, even physically where you go, because what you purchase is linked with where you're located when you make that purchase. If you want to retain what all previous generations on this earth have had as just a fundamental freedom, then you must pay cash. In my case, I don't use a credit card. When I go to the grocery store and I need to buy $150 worth of groceries, I will go to the bank and I will withdraw two $100 bills and I will put them in my purse and I will go to the store and buy my groceries in cash. And I don't scan a frequent shopper card. One of the things my husband and I actually looked at when we were buying the home that we live in was, is there a supermarket nearby that I can shop at? Because I boycott the stores that have those cards. So these are basic, you know, people say, well, gosh, that's all so hard. And I say, well, we have to be the change we want to see, and you have to behave the way that you wish everybody else behaved. And you can't account, you know, I can't control what you guys do, It's not up to me what you guys do, but I will say this. At the end of the day, when I look in the mirror and the world is crashing around my ears and we no longer have cash and we no longer have stores we can shop at that aren't monitoring our purchases, I'm at least going to be able to look in the mirror amidst all that chaos and say, hey, I did my part to try to stop this, and I have a clean conscience. And other people who say, well, you know, it's not, you know, nothing I do is really going to change it anyway. I'll just throw my hat in the ring with all these other people doing the default wrong thing. And I say, no, you actually do have a moral responsibility to behave according to your conscience. And you will feel better about yourself if you do. So cash, probably the bottom line, if I could sum all that up, cash, use it or lose it. If you do not begin withdrawing cash, carrying it around and paying with it, it's going to be gone. There will be no more cash. Some experts are predicting that by 2020, within 8 short years, that there will be no more cash available, that it'll just be gone. We'll be making our payments with our cell phones, which are just glorified tracking devices. So those are my sort of two retail pieces of advice. And now if we could move just a little bit into talking about microchips. Just want to give people an update on what's been happening with the implantable RFID microchip. That would be the Vera chip or Applied Digital Solutions implantable chip.
Somebody told me yesterday that they're going to be putting these vaccines. Well, sorry, putting the RFID chips into these vaccines and stuff like that. So when you go in and get your flu jab or something like that, bing, tagged.
Well, and by the way, I'm looking in the in your chat window. What a cool thing. I'd love to get one for my radio show. And my radio show is at kmashow.com, by the way. So I should talk to you, Vinny, about how you did this. It's very cool. But I'm looking in here, and people are saying that paper notes are not cash. The reality is Federal Reserve notes are not intrinsically valuable currency like gold or silver, but we do refer to them as cash because they are anonymous. So what I'm referring to are anonymous payment methods, which right now, for virtually every country on the globe, means paper currency. So intrinsically, yeah, it's no value. Federal Reserve notes here in the U.S. have no value other than the value that we as a society give them. I'm a big believer in backing currency with gold, but barring that, just from a privacy perspective, not a monetary policy perspective, the Federal Reserve note in your wallet is a better payment method than the credit card in your wallet. So anyway, with that said, as far as putting microchips into vaccines, there was a request for proposals by DARPA, which is the Defense Area Research Projects Agency. I think I got that right. It's the military. It's
actually, it's the Defense Advanced Research Program.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. So DARPA is the branch of the military that does all of the cutting-edge technological military research. And the interesting thing about DARPA is that once DARPA is working on something, it becomes classified. But there's a period of time during which, under sort of arcane U.S. law, that they are required to submit proposals on which they will be spending taxpayer dollars for public contractors to bid on. So military contractors will review these requests for proposals, and oftentimes what will happen is DARPA will already have a project in mind, and some, you know, company researcher, research, you know, whatever, will have developed something, shop it or ship it, you know, shop it, I guess, to DARPA and say, hey, would you like to do this? And DARPA would say, we'd love to do that. We'd love to fund you, but we can't just cut a check because we've got to open it up for competitive bidding. And that's the process that you can find. If you go into DARPA's website and you look up their proposals, you can actually see the kinds of things that they're, you know, proposing and offering taxpayer money to fund. Typically, and this is something I've just learned in the last couple of weeks, is people who've done military contracting have contacted me and told me this. Typically, by the time you see a DARPA request for proposals, the technology in question has already been developed, and there is a company already ready to make it available, and DARPA is just going through the motions to hire them and give them money.
And that's unfortunate, because now we've got to go through the motions and advertise so that you, the listeners, can give us money. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Catherine Albrecht.
Divided we fall.
just in time. Head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. But I can't do this all on my own.
Superman. Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm no Superman, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes when I see David Rockefeller. On AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week if you're keen. For those of you who are regular listeners, I apologize, but like the song would suggest, I am no Superman and I can't keep doing this, so I'm going to be taking a two-week break. For the first week, we're going to be having some guest hosts, and we'll be publishing those list of people on the website shortly. The Greek, who's been on the show a few times, he'll be hosting on a Friday show, and we'll have Lenny Horowitz and Sherry Kane and Karen Quintestato from United We Strike, who started Tax-Free 15 protest. You know, don't buy, don't comply, ask why. Some really great, fabulous people for you to listen to in my absence. And it's funny enough, it doesn't take me that long to get people to replace me. Isn't that great how the truth movement works? When one stone is shifted in the wall, another falls in its place to hold up the rest. My very special guest, Catherine Albrecht, coming on back. We've been talking about RFID and the food and all of that kind of stuff. And have you heard of the New Zealand food bill? Because this is quite a scary bit of thing. If you're growing so much as a turnip and give it to your neighbour, a Monsanto employee, not police, police won't be enforcing these laws, Monsanto employees, which have basically got exemptions from all criminal prosecution, trespass, or of any kind. They're basically walking gods, can come onto your property armed and arrest you for sharing food. This is like scary ass stuff, man. And it's all
well, and you know what it comes down to, there, I've been following this for many, many years because I first became interested in this whole issue around just food, I guess food freedom, food tracking, food privacy, and I've since expanded far beyond that initial topic. But you know, this whole idea is referred to within the industry as farm to fork tracking. And what it really is about is making sure that the small players, you know, you were saying, hey, we need to band together and create alternatives to these big corporations. Well, they want to ensure that you never can do that. And they want to do it by making it illegal to grow your own food, making it illegal or making it extraordinarily complicated to raise your own food or to have a local farm or a local co-op or a local business that deals in food in any way whatsoever. And, you know, we're seeing this. We're seeing in the U.S. raids on, families, you know, little local Amish families and local families that are simply raising vegetables in their own homes and making them available to their neighbors, and they're getting raided with SWAT teams and their doors busted down. You know, it's crazy what's happening. And it really is about this desire by the people at the top of the food chain, and on my own radio program, I refer to them as the pond scum. You know, they think of themselves as the cream of the crop, the cream that's risen to the top of the milk. And I live in New Hampshire, where we've got all of this. We're the Granite State, so we've got all these ponds, and they fill with scum. They fill with algae. You know, people fertilize their lawns. It all runs off into these ponds, and then the ponds have this algae bloom. But it's a thin layer along the top, but it essentially chokes out all of the light and the oxygen and the nutrients for everything else in the pond, which then stagnates and dies. And I really view society as having that level of pond scum across the top. They're doing the same
thing.
They want to choke out.
You're right, and I agree with you, because the origin of the word scumbaggery is the actions and portents of scumbags. And essentially what we're talking about is walking bags of pond scum that just basically, they don't even have to be sitting on the water. They can just walk around and suck all the light and life out of a room.
That's right. So whenever on my show I want to refer to the powers that be or the people at the top or whoever you want to call these people who are pulling the puppet strings of the Obamas and all of the world leaders and pulling the puppet strings of our media, the puppet strings of the global corporations, the people at the top, that's the pond scum. And the pond scum have really two things going on. Number one, they want everything to be about them. You know, they refer to us as cannon fodder. I've actually got one of the Rockefellers did a some kind of a climate thing like 10 years ago, and I played the audio on my show where one of the bankers at the event referred to us, you and me, as cannon fodder. And I thought, wow, they really do sit around and call us these names. That's appalling. So they view themselves as the real people, and the rest of us are cannon fodder, and they would love to reduce our numbers and make sure that we're maximally useful to them, or if we're not useful to them, that at least we're continuing to fund what they want to do. But then there's another piece to that. And the other piece to it, I think, it has a deep spiritual component, and we can certainly get into all of that because I believe all of this stuff is really a spiritual battle. But they have this almost pathological desire to control everything. And when I got involved in the issue of RFID, radio frequency microchips, my mind was blown. When I was researching with my co-author the 30,000 different documents that we read to write the book Spy Chips, you know, we went through promotional documents, confidential documents, white papers, technical specs, patent filings, received patents. We went through, you've no idea how much stuff we read in order to write that book. And in the process of reading all of that stuff, one thing kept striking me over and over, which is that these people know no bounds, none. They want to know. I was at an industry event, probably 2003, and one of the executives at the event said, won't it be great when we'll know every time the consumer takes the lid off the toothpaste in their own bathroom? And I'm thinking, you're out of your mind. That's, first of all, so none of your business. But second of all, what in the heck is wrong with you? Like, why do you need to have that level of knowledge about what I do in my bathroom? And I'll tell you this, Vinny, we saw proposals for placing microchips into every sapling, that's every baby tree on the globe. They said, we're getting to the point now where we've identified and mapped out all of the land. This is all Agenda 21 stuff. We've mapped out all the land. We know all the trees, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we could just put a microchip into every single one of them and track them all the time. We'd know when they were cut down. We'd know when they were transported. We'd know when they were growing. I'm like, you people are insane. So even now, there's a big project to microchip huge swaths of ocean life up in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S., up in Oregon and Washington. They put microchips into the salmon. They actually capture them as they go over these gorges. They capture them in nets. They take them over to the side. There's a video of this that will make you absolutely throw up. It's so gross. They have these writhing salmon, and they pull them out, and they go choo, choo, choo. And one by one, manually, this guy, you know, wearing boots and gloves, is sticking a microchip in every salmon, and he throws them back in the water. And they have built a, it's like a big cement tunnel that is the size of, it's like as big as a house. It's huge. This big, huge cement tunnel in the water that the water goes through. And the whole thing is electromagnetically aware so that as these microchips go through, it counts the salmon. So, you know, and just to finish that story, there are islands in that area of the country that glisten. If you fly over them in a small plane, the whole island is shining like it's been sparkled with glitter. And if you get down on the ground of these islands, what you'll see is it's all the glass microchips covering the island from where the terns, T-E-R-N, the birds that eat these salmon, have eaten the salmon. They have their nest there. They poop out these little microchips, and they're everywhere because they've used tens of millions of microchips into these animals. So you look at that, and you say, okay, there is a pathological desire at this point to know everything. And it's a sickness. It really is. I once interviewed a guy at Harvard who works on these kinds of issues. And in the course of just chatting with him about this, he revealed to me that he had put a microchip on the collar, an RFID tracking device on the collar of his cat, because he wanted to know when the cat went in and out. And he was going to hook it up to the litter box, so he would know precisely at what moment the cat went poo in the litter box. And I'm thinking, can you not just look? Like when you get home from work and you not just go, wow, it needs scooping out. I was at another event. This was at MIT, right down the street from Harvard. And in this event, they were talking about how you can use your supermarket frequent shopper card and you can link it up with RFID and you have this online refrigerator. So all you have to do is pull out your smartphone and you could tell what's in your refrigerator, the contents of your fridge, so you'd know what to make for dinner. And I'm thinking, you need to look at a computer screen to know what's in your blankety-blank refrigerator. Can you not just walk over and open the door of your refrigerator and just look inside? There was a guy at MIT who was kind of a joke when I was a student there because he was the first guy. These Google goggles, you know, where you'd put on this kind of Terminator-style glasses that give you an enhanced, technologically enhanced view of the world around you. This guy had a set of, he had this hat, this like helmet that he would wear on his head. He would walk around. And all it did, I kid you not, was it had a screen inside the helmet that showed him exactly what he would have seen with his eyes. But he wanted to translate it through the video screen so he could see it in a video format rather than a real life format. So that's what we're going to.
That's what we're going to, and we've got one more whole hour with Catherine Albrecht. I don't know where the first hour went. Oh, my goodness. Time flies when you're being tracked by GPS, I guess. And also, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to come into the chat room, and Catherine can chat with you over the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And also, later on this afternoon, in about less than 2 hours, we will be holding a chemtrail protest on the corner of Newton Road and Simon Street in Auckland. So I've got the banners, I've got the megaphones being delivered. Everything's going to be fabulous. Wear your best suits and gas masks. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And also, if the people listening happen to be listening in from New Zealand, Auckland, or anything within an hour's drive or something like that, in about 2 hours' time, we'll be kicking off the old chemtrail protest. And I would love to see you there. First one will be at 1 o'clock at the corner of Simon Street and Newton Road in town. And there's parking in St. Benedict's Ave. So I hope to see you there. And we'll be moving every hour to a different protest site in busy intersections right the way across the city. So if you want to join in this little splurge, I'll be filming it and putting it on YouTube and all of that kind of stuff. If you love exposing scumbaggery or you'd like to know how, then just show up. You know, 90% of getting the work done is just showing up. I can assure you. My very special guest is Catherine Albrecht. And Catherine, we also have a message to pass on to you from Danny Romero, owner of American Freedom Radio. He says hi. Catherine, are you there? appear to not have her. So, Catherine, if you are there and you can still hear me, we occasionally have some problems with the call-in line, so you want to just quickly hang up and ring back. It usually resets itself nice and easily. Other than the point of that fact, also wanted to talk about this food bill and the fact that privacy and tracking and all of this sort of stuff, just how it affects you on your daily basis. Like, for example, how many times would you purchase something on a daily basis? Probably you'd purchase something every day, right? Because you need to purchase stuff to survive. You've got to purchase your power, purchase your rent, purchase your this, that, and the other, right? Scary stuff, man. There is a very, very dangerous prospect with anything that involves tracking products, tracking purchases. These sorts of things are, in my opinion, very personal and are nobody else's business. Okay? That's what I feel. If you're going to be tracking something that ain't your business, then you shouldn't be doing it. Okay? I'm not sure if this applies to parents and their children, though. I think there's a little bit of parental responsibility that can be applied there. Excuse me, is my son smoking crack? Oh, it's none of my business. Actually, it is. You're a parent. You're supposed to be responsible for them until they're old enough to take care of themselves. But when you are an adult and other people are trying to be your parent, I don't think that is a brilliant move. Because let's face it, if you're living in daddy's house and daddy feeds you, lets you borrow his car and things like that, sure, it might be nice and you may not have to work too hard, but when daddy tells you to take out the trash, you have to. When daddy tells you you can't take the car to the next town to go to a party, you can't. That's the kind of world we're going to be living in. A big daddy for everybody. Catherine, I believe you're back.
I am back, Vinny. Hello. So I know we have limited time until the bottom of the hour, so let me see if I can just quickly slam through a couple of things I want to make sure to tell your listeners about this morning, if you're in New Zealand, or this evening, if you're in my part of the world. As far as the implantable microchips go, we kind of got started on the DARPA thing, and then I forgot to finish my thought, so let me do that now. The DARPA request for proposals was actually for nanotechnology, microscopic microchips that could be injected into soldiers that would enable a tracking system to identify the physiological processes going on inside the soldiers' bodies. For example, if they had an elevated heart rate, or if they had been exposed to a biological agent, or, you know, the list goes on and on. The request for proposals that is available on the DARPA website that you can check out. Before you go to the DARPA website, wait, because I'm going to tell you how you can get there privately in just a moment. But on the DARPA website, you can see in the request for proposals, this microchipping proposal. It just came out within the last month or so. And what it says is we are looking for a company that can develop this nano microchip technology for injection into the bodies initially of animals, and then we'll work our way up to soldiers. And they set a couple of dates for completion. And one of the dates was, I think it's like 24 months. I don't have the document right in front of me, but there was a date by which they want the proof of concept in a petri dish in vitro, as they say, vitro being from the Latin for glass, vitreous, vitro. So in glass test tubes, they want to be able to see that these tiny microchips can be injected into plasma or into cell cultures and be able to transmit information about the cell cultures. Then the second phase, they want it to be able to be injected into small animals. I think they gave themselves 3 years for that. And then they want them to be injected into large animals and then test that, and then ultimately to see how viable and safe this would be for injection into human beings. And this is one of the reasons why I tell people, whatever you do, you don't want to join the military if you can avoid it. In the U.S., we have a voluntary military. And I don't think it's a good idea to join the military at this moment in time, because that's a captive population. You know, these technologies are typically tested on one form of captive population or another, whether it's prisoners, whether it's school children, which are captive in their own way, whether it is Alzheimer's patients or the elderly who have their own form of inability to say no, or whether it's on soldiers or government employees, they will generally test these things out on captive populations first and then work their way towards the general public. There are, I'm going to give people sort of a big picture on that. There are really two kinds of technological developments. The kind that in the past you would have had to come at people with guns and tanks and laws and regulations and force them to do, and that would be probably implantable microchips. Most people don't want to be chipped. And then the other kind, which have the ability, if you spin it around right, and if you have control of the media, which they do, you can get people to voluntarily sign up for, and if you really play your cards right, you can get people to thank you for the privilege of you enslaving them. And a great example of that, I don't know if you have these in New Zealand, but in the U.S. we have toll transponders on our cars, so that when you drive through a toll booth, I still do, slow down, and there's a human being there, and I hand them a dollar bill, and then I go through the toll. I have to do it every time I drive to our state capital in New Hampshire.
We've got something worse than that. When you go through a toll lane, it just snaps a picture of your license plate and then matches it to a profile or something like that, and you have to go to the website and pay it off. Otherwise, they send a fine to your license plate address.
Exactly. So there you go. So, but it's interesting, the process, and I guess I want to step back, and this is what I do on my radio program. It's less about giving you the facts, because you can get those yourself. It's more about giving you the big picture of what do the facts mean and what are the underlying principles of those facts. And one of the things that I've observed in my 15 years of doing this work is that you can take a program that's ugly and repugnant, and if you make it voluntary, and then you offer either incentives for doing it, or, better yet, offer punishments for not doing it, then people will voluntarily sign up. And once you have 80% of the population, and I think that's about the right number, as soon as 80% of the population is on board, then at that point you can make it mandatory, because the 20% of holdouts are already kind of weird. They're already sort of self-selected as an unusual group, and the rest of the population will not listen to their cries and their protests, and they can force it on the remaining 20%. So toll transponders being a perfect example, when they first came out, they provided a discount. If you had the toll transponder, you would receive, you'd pay less to go through the toll booth. If you had the toll transponder, you could zip through quickly. So they'd set up like 6 toll lanes with a transponder and 1 for the cash-paying people. So the line would be stretching for miles for these cash-paying people. It would be sucking down fumes in the heat while everybody else was just zipping on past. So that's a form of penalty for refusal to comply, and combined with an incentive for compliance in the form of lower prices. So they put them both together. And as a result, we're coming up on about 80% penetration for people who regularly drive through the tolls. Once we hit that 80%, I think it's just a matter of time before they say, that's the only way you can do it. So the same thing is also true with the supermarket frequent shopper cards. We're at about 80% penetration for those, about 80% compliance with those, and the list goes on and on. The thing I want to get into just a little bit before we end here is Google, because Google is a perfect example of thanking the entity that is putting chains around your ankles. So instead of fighting back, we are thanking Google for being so wonderful, when in reality, Google, I have to say, is the most frightening company on the planet. And even today, I was driving in the car with my husband. I was just thinking how terrified I am of this company, because I think they're truly frightening.
I thought the most frightening company in the world was the United States of America.
Well, you can probably say that too, but the U.S. knows less about you than Google does. And
well,
Google is in league.
Certainly United States citizens would know less about New Zealand than Google does, for sure. Because the other thing is that we've also become trapped by the system to a degree, right? If you're half in a trap, you can get out, but you might lose a leg or something in the Wolverine sense of the word. You know, I'm going to get out of that trap and I'm going to gnaw my leg off. And I think that's basically what we have to do here, is that we have to treat this entire system as a rotting limb that we want to just leave to rot and not be part of anymore, kind of thing. That's the mentality we have to take. And it really is just a straight just if that company is part of it, you cannot purchase with them, you can't use them, and things of that nature. But the scary thing is, Catherine, is that these mechanisms that Google's using to track people, like YouTube and all of that kind of stuff, they're the places where I put my content and get heaps of people who love the New World Order system and love all the bright lights and the celebrities and everything like that. And occasionally those people will come and be exposed to my information by using these mainstream platforms. So it's a double-edged sword, and I think in some ways I like the system that they've built because it allows me to do a lot of things. The problem is we just need to restrict in some way how them from tracking us and violating our privacy. I'm not sure if it's a balancing act on a razor's edge or something of that nature, but I don't know exactly what the solution is, and I'm hoping you might. Catherine, hold on. We've seemed to have some problems with the phones again. I've sent your assistant, Tiffany, a different number to call into. So if you can just call back, that would be fine. Yeah, this is something that is happening in live radio all the time as well. Just a word of warning to the people who ever want to go into radio. Things can and do go wrong. Just like life. But you can't be too worried about it because, well, let's face it, the more you worry about things, the more stressed you are about them. If you worry about things you can't do anything about, that is. If you're worrying about things that you can do something about and then you do something about them, then that worrying is basically just your thinking process and your problem solving going on. However, if it's something that you have absolutely no control over, and you can't contribute to, that's 1,000, 10,000 miles away or something of that nature, then you got a problem because that's a problem you can't solve, isn't it? RFID, these bank cards and everything else, and this has actually been kind of like a life-changing interview even to the point, because it's going to make me change my entire shopping habits and what goes on around here. You know what I'm saying? There's something inherently wrong with society that very few of us are even capable of comprehending without the huge amount of research that people like Catherine Albrecht have been doing, okay? Research, intelligence, all of that sort of stuff. Not all people who go to university and graduate and go on to become leaders or whatever in society are bad people. Sometimes they're trying to work within a system. But I think the time where you're trying to find a way to work within the system might be drawing to an end. And I think Catherine has called back in. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Ah, much better. All right, so I'm looking at the clock, and unfortunately, I have another commitment at 7:30. So let me see if I can dive into the Google issue because people need to understand this probably more than anything
we
else.
We only have 90 seconds. So
oh, I thought I was here till 7:30.
You can be here till 7:30, but this segment's going to end in 90 seconds. We've got an ad break.
Okay. Well, let me encourage people then during this break if they'd like to check out startpage.com, startpage. This is the private search engine that I helped to develop. And what I'd like to talk about is the ways in which Google captures your information and why I think that threatens our privacy, and not just our privacy, because privacy is not an end. Privacy is a means to an end, and that end is freedom and control. And if you lose your privacy, you will lose your freedom. You will lose your control over your own information. And Google, I believe, is coupled with Apple. I'd say Google and Apple together are probably the two biggest threats to your privacy, hence your freedom, and ultimately your control over your own destiny and your own future. So I encourage people to check out startpage.com. It's a private search engine. Anything you enter into that search engine, there's no record made of your IP address, what you search for. It's all completely private. And then I'm going to show you guys a really cool trick. I told you I was going to tell you a cool way to get into DARPA without DARPA knowing you're there, and you can actually do that through Startpage, so I can talk people through the process.
All right. Well, we'll be right back in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Also, after the show, we normally have a conference call with any of the listeners who are keen. So if you are keen to join in the conference call and talk with me and other listeners to the show, make a friend and maybe even speak to some of your elders or even your youngers or anything like that, come to the chat room towards the end of the show and pop in your Skype address and we will add you into the conference call. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back. Sunrise, appropriate song for today's chemtrail protest. Shadow coming over the skies, coming out of some giant airliner thingies. My very special guest is Catherine Albrecht, and we only got you for a few more minutes. So I'll ask you the final question that I normally ask my guests, if I remember. You know how we all kind of self-censor a little bit? We wonder whether or not if we say something that's kind of like out of left field, maybe even they wouldn't expect it to come out of our mouths or something of that nature. And you think that maybe if you'd say it on radio or on air or something like that, that the host might judge you or maybe the audience won't comprehend you or something like that? Well, I pride myself on being the host that won't judge you, and I pride my audience on being the ones who will comprehend you. So if you want to say anything you like that you wouldn't ordinarily do, here's the place to do it.
Ah, well, that's a very interesting invitation. You know, I've done probably 1,000 radio interviews, and that's the first time I've heard that one, and I think it's kind of cool. I bet you get a lot of interesting comments from people with that. Well, the one thing I would tell people is that I absolutely believe that this physical reality all around us is just a fleeting blip on the screen, that there is a much bigger battle at stake, that battle is whether you're going to fight on the side of good or the side of darkness. I am a born-again, Bible-believing, wear-it-on-my-sleeve Christian. I absolutely believe that the technologies that I research and study have everything to do with the mark of the beast. I believe that we are now technologically capable for the first time in 2,000 years since biblical prophecy was granted and that was recorded about the mark of the beast. We have the technological capability of building it and putting it into place. I can feel the hot breath of the beast nipping at our heels right now as we speak. I've written a book called I Won't Take the Mark, which is about the mark of the beast for children ages probably 6 to about 12. And that's going to be coming out, Lord willing, by around Christmas time. I have written the book because when I was 8 years old, my own grandmother took me aside. This was in the 1970s and said, there's going to be a time people won't be able to buy or sell without a number or a mark on their right hand or their forehead. And I said, wow, I can't even figure out how that could be possible because back then people didn't even have credit cards where I live, much less were there computers and a web and a net and an internet. And by the way, it's not a mistake. It's called the web or the net because it's all about enslaving and trapping humanity. And I made a vow when I was 8 years old that I would never take the mark of the beast and that if I saw it coming to pass in my lifetime, I'd pick up my Bible and I'd know it was true. So that has taken me on an extraordinary journey through my life. I had a visit by the Holy Spirit in 1999 that changed my life, picked me up out of what I was doing, dropped me square into the middle of the work I do now, where I've testified before the Federal Trade Commission and been invited by the Royal Society of London and spoken in Australia. And I've been all over the world. I've been on, you know, every possible major television program you can name, BBC, CBS, Evening News, NBC, NPR, Times of London, full page spread with my picture. I've done all this crazy stuff that I never expected that I would do. And all of it because I was picked up and I was told, hey, this is your job. This is your mission. You got to go out there and warn people that this is coming. So that's a big part of what I do. I would still do the privacy work that I do, even if I didn't have my strong religious convictions. But I'll tell you, when you actually understand what's at stake, then everything, you know, that's a major game changer. So before I get any further on that, I'm looking at the clock. I've got to tell people about StartPage. When you, and more importantly about Gmail, we, the Freedom Community, must stop using Gmail accounts. Listen to me and listen to me good. You must stop using Gmail as your email provider. I now have a policy where I don't even write to people with Gmail accounts because hidden in the fine print of Google's contract with you and officially put in place as of April of this year is a policy that says that everything you do on any Google service will be recorded and placed into your central file that they keep on you. They're keeping a digital dossier on citizens around the globe. They know more about us than the NSA, CIA, IRS, and FBI combined. It's mind-blowing how much they know about us. And this is Google. How do they know it? Because multiple times a day, we take our brains and we plug them into a conduit that transmits everything we're thinking about directly into the global brain of Google. And in fact, when Sergey and Larry were asked, what do you want Google to become? Their answer was like the mind of God. So that's a lot of hubris. I got to tell you, that's a pretty intense statement to make there. But they're trying to do it. They have a picture of your home from a satellite up in the air. They got a picture of the front of your home from Google Street View. They are monitoring every single thing you think about because you punch it into the Google search engine and you thank them for the privilege. So whenever people say, oh, but I can't give up Google because they're so wonderful and they give me all these products for free. And I say, well, that should tip you off right there. When was the last time a multinational global corporation gave you all of its products for free? And the answer is they don't. They don't. Those aren't products. They're bait. And you are the product. So they're luring you in. And something that if Stalin or Hitler or any dictator or Obama or anybody else, if they said, hey, listen, it's 1984, and we want you to just walk up to this machine and tell us what's on your mind multiple times a day, people would, there'd be riots in the streets. But when you put nice little, you know, red, yellow, blue, and green colors around it and you call it Google and you convince people that it is a gift that you're giving them free information, then they thank you for the privilege. So every single search term you enter into Google is recorded and stored. They boast that they know more about your health than your doctor. They boast that they know more about your contentedness at work than you yourself know, that they can even predict when you're going to quit your job based on how you use Google and what you look up. It's mind-blowing. If you, now let me take this over to Gmail. And by the way, the answer to that is startpage.com. Add it to your browser, make it your homepage, pull the Google needle out of your arm, because they are simply providing you a window. Instead of seeing that window as what's on your mind so we can answer your question today, I want you to view that window as what can we record in our monstrous database about you now? And if you type in there, you know, drug addiction, miscarriage, sexually transmitted disease, foreclosure on my home, whatever, they'll go, oh, thank you. Thanks for reporting that. We'll just put it right here in your file. So Gmail is even worse, because what Gmail is doing is every single thing you send in a Gmail, they extract all the keywords and they add them to your profile, along with to the person to whom you wrote them. So people may know this, and this could be a whole other show, but I recently finished treatment for breast cancer, locally advanced breast cancer, and I went through 18 months of hell, essentially, and I've come in on the other side of it, and I'm healthy now. But my primary care doctor said, hey, listen, I want to get your, could you send me all your records? I know you've got some things that you scanned. Could you send them to me? And she gives me, I'm like, sure. She gives me her email address, and it's a Gmail account. And I said, you got to be kidding me. Because if I send you my blood test results and all of my medical documentation as a PDF, according to the terms of service of Google, they will copy that PDF, they will strip it right off of that email, and they will put it in my file. And now they will know who my doctor is, they'll know my date of birth, they'll know my medical ID number, they will know all of my medical conditions, they'll know everything about me. So we need to wake up and smell the coffee here, that this company that is seemingly providing us with 10 million freebies is really creating a mind-blowing dossier of information on every single one of us. And at the point when the government says, listen, I want to distinguish the people who spend all their time online looking at Britney Spears and Lady Gaga from the people who spend their time online looking at the 10th Amendment and firearms regulations, from the people who voted for Ron Paul, from the people who fill in the blank. And when that time comes and they want to figure out who we are, who are they going to go to? They're going to go to Google. They don't need to surveil us. They don't need an eye-in-the-sky camera. They don't need anything other than to simply go to Google, because Google knows everything about you. They even know what your mom made for dinner last week because she looked up the flippin' recipe on Google. They know everything. So we have got to stop contributing our personal information to the system. Now, people will say, oh, but Facebook is so much worse. Facebook is nothing like Google. Because when you post something on Facebook, you are intentionally posting it for public consumption. You may just be posting it for your friend's public consumption, but you're posting it, and you know that it's going to be public. When you go on to Google and you've got the shades drawn and the door shut and you're looking around making sure nobody's there, you're all alone because you need to look up something intensely personal, it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. You know, a woman has a miscarriage, she wants to get some online support. Man, that's not doing something wrong. You missed a mortgage payment, you're worried you might lose your home, you're trying to find a new job, you're looking for unemployment insurance, that's not doing anything wrong. It's private, though. And if you care enough to make sure that nobody's looking over your shoulder when you do it, you need to be doing it at Start Page. Because if you do it at Google, they're recording it. So this company is scaring the bejeebers out of me. What they did earlier this year in the spring was they introduced their oneness privacy policy, which says that anything you do on any Google service, Google Calendar, Picasa, Google Street View, Google Maps, Google Books, Google blah, 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 anything you do on any Google service will be linked into a central file. And that was the big transition in the spring. They centralized the data keeping into one central file on you. And if you could look at that file, you would have a heart attack if you could see how much they know. It's terrifying. So for that reason, when I discovered this, I said, well, I'm either going to have to go live in the woods and give up the computer altogether, or I'm going to have to find an alternative. And that's how we created StartPage. So startpage.com, it's owned by a small independent, actually a wonderful family in the Netherlands, where the privacy regulations are extremely tight. When you go onto startpage.com, essentially what happens is you land on our website. We get your IP address, but we actually don't. Every website you land on gets your IP address. We overwrite it instantly with zeros. So we never, not only do we not store it, we never get it. We instantly go zeros. So even if somebody were to hack into our system, God forbid, or subpoena us, all they would get would be a bunch of zeros. They wouldn't know who had used our services. And then the second thing, when you punch in your search request, and I want to do this with DARPA real quick. If you go to startpage.com and punch in DARPA, that search, we will take your search from our servers in California and in Holland, and we will take that search term, DARPA, submit it to Google. We get the answers from Google, so they don't see you, they just see us submitting it. We get the answer from Google. We then strip out all of their tracking cookies and garbageola, and then we serve it to you cleanly with third-party certified privacy. And at that point, you have another extraordinarily cool option. And go ahead and do this. If you search for DARPA in startpage.com, and you can remember it because it's where we want you to start your web surfing, so make it your homepage. Underneath the search results, there's an option that says View by IxQuick Proxy. IxQuick is our other search engine. It's kind of the parent company of StartPage. So View by IxQuick Proxy means that we will not only do your search privately, which we just did, but we will go out to DARPA and do the same thing with DARPA that we just did with Google. So we'll go to the DARPA page you want to see, and we, from our servers, will load the DARPA information onto our servers, strip out all the crap, and then we'll load it back to you. So DARPA never sees you. They have no idea who landed on the page. If they were going to put malware or some kind of tracking device or who knows what kind of garbage they use over there on your computer, they couldn't because you never make contact with them. They never make contact with you. We're the buffer, and that's the proxy service. It's available with every single search you do at startpage.com. And I wouldn't use it every day because it doesn't allow you to fill in forms for security reasons because it's so private that if you were to use it to log into somebody's bank account and tap them out, we couldn't find you. Nobody could figure out it was you. So we disabled the filling out of forms, which is kind of a pain. It's a little bit slower because the page has to load twice. DARPA, we load it from DARPA and then you got to load it from us. So it slows you down a little bit. But if there's a private web surfing that you want to do and you don't trust the place you're going and you don't want them to see you, then startpage.com will enable you to use that proxy so you can surf the web privately in addition to doing your searches privately. Now the final thing. On the Gmail issue, people say, well, what are we supposed to do, Catherine? You're giving us all this bad news. Well, as far as Gmail goes, don't use them. That's a simple one. I would even be careful replying to Gmail emails that come into you because anything you reply is going to go in your file and in the person you replied to's file. We are developing StartMail, which is StartPage email, which will be coming out the early part of 2013. And if your listeners would like to beta test, I've been given permission to do this throughout the summer, to make available beta test slots to radio listeners, you can do the following. Go to startpage.com, click on the StartPage logo, which will take you into the sub pages where there's a menu. Look on the left of the menu, and at the bottom it will say Contact Us. Click that. It'll bring you up to a little form that you can fill out. And on that form, I want you to say, hey, I was listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show. I heard Catherine on the show, and she said that I could sign up and be a beta tester, B-E-T-A, beta tester for your email. And Tiffany, who's answering these, she will write you back, confirm it, put you on the mailing list so that when it comes out, you will receive an automatic sign-up so you can kick the tires, let us know what you think. It'll be completely private. We won't even be able to read your email if we wanted to. Not only will we not read it like Google, we couldn't read it if we tried because it will be fully encrypted. It will have the option of using PGP, pretty good privacy, which is actually strong encryption. And the entire disk will be encrypted. So even if somebody, you know, tanks busted down our doors and took the disk itself, they couldn't read your email because it's encrypted on there and you're the only one who has the key. So it's going to be powerful. It's going to be awesome. I'm super excited about it. It is not going to be free, got to tell you. You know, Google Gmail is worth about $5 a month. And you let them scan all of the things you write for $5 a month, which is ridiculous. So we're actually going to charge the $5 a month that it's worth, and that's going to be coming out in early 2013.
Okay, Catherine Albrecht, thank you very much for coming on the show today, and we all appreciate the work that you do in scaring the bejesus out of us, but then showing us how to basically protect ourselves.
Hey, nice. You know, that's the key, because it can't all be negative, or we'd all just hang our heads. I mean, I love what you do on your show of adding in humor. I think that's wonderful. You got to keep your sense of humor. And what I discovered after years of telling people bad news is I got to give people good news to counter it, or else we all just want to, you know, give up. So startpage.com and startmail, and my show is kmashow.com.
Absolutely. The natural way that nature does it, ladies and gentlemen, is they package the poison with the cure, and they keep you healthy. See you again sometime, Catherine. And ladies and gentlemen, one more segment to go.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Vanilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Cross Welcome back.
Bear, man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Chemtrail theme song. I've been everywhere, man. And, the chemtrails are even in the mountain air, man, apparently. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I just interviewed Catherine freaking Albrecht. How cool do I feel? Didn't even know who she was before she came on the show. But it occurs to me, right, that all of these great guests that I have on, like, if you ever want to, like, ever look at a litany of fabulous, like, top-notch guests that you'd expect to see on the biggest radio shows and the whole internet and all that kind of stuff, go to look at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com featured interviews. Heck yeah! There's a litany, all right? And this is just one more that we'll be adding onto the list. A very prestigious list, indeed, of extremely talented, fabulous scumbaggery exposing individuals who are just so grand and good sorts. They have a lot of grace. We only got a few minutes left in the show today, so I wanted to, again, anybody who's about to be leaving the house, as I will be right after the show to go to the chemtrail protest, please do. You can contact me on Facebook or send me a text message or whatever. Go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com chat room. But ultimately, best place for info and times, everything like that, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com homepage. or guerrillamedia.co.nz, and there's links to that on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Okay, it's the top thing on the website. Can't miss it. Pretty obvious the places you should be in order to hold a banner with me and experience what a 100-watt megaphone sounds like when it's talking about chemtrails and exposing scumbaggery, which I think would be one of the most grandest experiences of my life, and probably yours too. It would be fun. Have you noticed that whenever you're afraid of something, it actually makes you feel really good and happy with yourself by going out and exposing it? Kind of like if a bully comes up to you on the street, starts pushing you around or anything like that. You wish at some point you could just knock him out, knock him off his feet, and just look at him on the ground there. And you think to yourself, man, I was capable of doing that. I just knocked somebody who was twice my size off their feet because they didn't see it coming, because they thought that they were intimidating enough to get me to do absolutely nothing and just lie down and sit there and take it. Huh? I feel really good about myself. I've just now realized how strong I am. And so the next time anybody comes up to me, he won't know who he's dealing with. Right? Let him watch. We were talking about tracing and Google and all of that stuff. And up till now, my philosophy has always been, let him watch. Every moment they do, all this databasing and everything that happens, all it's doing is all these analysts will look through this and they'll absorb all this information. And all these people are real people. Maybe they don't quite know what's going on yet, but reading the emails that I've sent, watching every video that I've uploaded, listening to every radio show that I put out, mate, I don't care who you are. It will change your life. It's changed mine. It's changed the lives of many of my listeners. In fact, saved lives, literally. We've had people contacted us and say they were about to commit suicide until this show came on the air because they didn't see a way out. They couldn't cope. And then suddenly, there's a reason to laugh every day. That's the kind of thing that makes me feel really good. And that's why I want to meet and talk to as many of the listeners as possible, because every single one that I've met and talked to is such a good cat, man. Salt of the earth type of people. Usually very professional, intelligent, and smiley, and happy, and gentle, and understanding, and compassionate. They're just like me, you know, really willing to go out on a limb for other people. And it occurs to me that I've been like that my entire life. Two things will happen to you if you go out on a limb for people. One, that limb is going to crack and you're going to fall to the floor. And it's going to take you some time to pick yourself back up. Two, that limb's going to support you and stabilize you and become part of your ever-growing tree of social contacts and a forest that can sustain you, so to speak. That's what happens. Because I was thinking to myself, man, I've been screwed over a lot in my life by lots of people. Stolen stuff, lied about me, gotten me fired, yada, yada, yada. All this bad stuff, right? Now, thinking, I was just hanging around with the wrong people. Those people who judge me too quickly, who don't really care about me and ultimately mostly just care about themselves and wouldn't really go out on a limb for me. And I learned over time that that wasn't the kind of person that you should hang out with. You should hang out with the kind of person who is just like you on those base principles. They're not going to violate you in any way. They're not going to attack you physically or verbally. And they're not going to steal from you or damage your property. Those four things I think are pretty simple. And that ensures that you've got an honest, trustworthy relationship with somebody who may lie to you or anything like that, but they're not going to hurt you and they're not going to take anything from you. So in which case, you shouldn't need to worry about it. Unfortunately, as a result of being open and honest and giving most of our lives, sometimes getting shafted time and time again, having things stolen off you, that kind of stuff, it really hurts. And you start to dwell on it for maybe a little bit longer than you should. and it starts to dictate your life, because like a obstacle course in the military or whatever, there's a big wall that you need to climb over that's right in the middle of the obstacle course. And if you don't have the physical strength to get over that wall first time, you have to repeat the whole obstacle course. That is what your memories and your experiences are like. You are either going to get over them, or you are going to be doomed to repeat them. That's the problem. So get over it, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care if anybody screwed you over, arrested you, lied about you, destroyed your life, stolen everything that was of value, left you in the lurch in the middle of nowhere. You're still alive, aren't you? Well, for goodness sake, now you know what kind of people you shouldn't hang around. And that's why I did this Vinny Eastwood social network thing. So if you want to meet up with somebody who's like a listener to this show, so they're probably a lot like me and probably a lot like you, might be in your area or something like that, send us an email through thevinnyeastwoodshow.com or add us on Skype. Go to the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We'll put a Skype address and stuff in there for you. And connect, okay? That's what you got to do, man. You really have to connect with people of like mind who actually care about you, because it makes you feel cared about, and that makes you feel comfortable, and that makes you feel happy. And I can assure you, if you're cared for, if you're comfortable, if you're happy, you will pass on all of that benefit to everybody that you meet and talk to. Okay? We're infectious, every single one of us. Everything that we do will infect others around us. We could either infect them with a very low energy, boom, 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 kind of pulse of anger and depression, or very high energy, love and happiness and just joy that, oh my God, no matter how, whatever the New World Order throws at me, no matter how many people lie about me or call me names or try to attack me or any stuff like that, I remember that which matters most. I'm still here. So they can't be that powerful. They can't really be that strong. Because I'm only one person, and they can't defeat me. So how can they really defeat all of us if we recognize how powerful we are as individuals? There is no collective. There is no groupthink. Everybody understands who they are, or at least everybody should. Has some respect for themselves and respect that other people have their own choices in life as well. That's how you create relationships and friends, on a basis of mutual respect for each other's choices, individuality, spirituality, whateverality. It matters not. Just remember, you don't like being judged. You don't like being told what to do. So stop doing it to other people. You don't like being yelled at either. You don't like being told you're an idiot either. So stop telling that to people, even if they do deserve to be yelled at or thing like that. You don't want to be the bearer of aggressive news, do you? Just be cool, man. Just be cool. Because you get a lot more flies from honey than you do from vinegar. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. I hope you will be joining me if you're in New Zealand, in Auckland right now, on the corner of Newton Road and Simon Street, in the nice little busy intersection there, for the 1 o'clock kickoff of the protest. And there's also one in Kingsland and New Lynn and Balmoral, all right? By the KFC and all of that sort of stuff down the bottom of the ground. Details at guerrillamedia.co.nz. Hopefully somebody else will be able to handle the after the show talk for me today, because I'm getting on out of here. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Yeah.